Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is first time, Scott Stratton, who is the president of Unmarketing, a little company up there in Toronto, Canada. He's also written a well-received book by the same name, and just recently put out one that we're going to talk about today, QR Codes Kill Kittens, How to Alienate Customers, Dishearten Employees, and Drive Your Business into the Ground. So with a buildup like that, Scott, welcome.
Yeah, I just thought you didn't like me. That's why it took so long to get here. And I'm certainly glad we're chatting now. It's funny, you're yourself and your name is somebody that I've known of in the industry and probably the only person I haven't actually met yet. So it's amazing how we're both... I think it's so if one of us is at an event, the other one isn't.
Yeah, I think that's what's really odd is that I can't recall an event I've spoken at where you've been there at the same time. So.
No, I think it's like those samurai fighting fish. You can't put them both in the same bowl at the same time or there's trouble.
Well, Unmarketing and Duct Tape Marketing, I don't know what that would be blended together. So essentially, this book, QR Codes Kill Kittens, first off, it's a, it's in that, I don't know, I'm sure publishers have a name for it, in that I call snack size read.
Right.
It's essentially a book of what not to do, isn't it?
It's exactly what it is. I call it a picture book for business people who are fed up. And it really is just a smaller kind of hardcover. I put it out there actually as a gift book for people who have business clients and they want to give them something different. And as long as you don't appear in it yourself, there's enough books out there telling you what to do. So we figured let's do something to show you what not to do.
Unless you're Jay Bear, then you get special appearance in it twice that you probably do want to buy this for your customers, right?
I think Jay would. I think that the revelation of him and Happy Pets isn't so bad that he can't share it.
That's right. So... let me ask you this. I've actually owned my own business for over 25 years, and I've done dumb things all 25 years. I know people that have done dumb things all 25 years, but are we doing more dumb things, or is it just easier to get caught?
I think it's the latter. I think that as long as humans have been involved, dumb things happen. I've been leveraging dumb things for over a decade myself when it comes to, what businesses do. I just think that not only are we getting caught more, it really is more public. Like the majority of that book, the screw-ups have been kind of revealed within the social media channels. That, everything is publicized now. That it's no longer that press release that is the one thing we're allowed to getting out of our inner circle in the company. It's just so reactionary-based now. It's so... kind of free flowing that you realize that a lot of people either don't know what they're doing or don't think things through. So I'm all for the organic and community and connection, but there's some danger sometimes when you just release the hounds and let everything go.
Yeah, and that's obviously the double-edged sword, right? Because we want stuff. I mean, it's now gotten easier to get more attention.
Right.
But it's obviously, it's way harder to turn back that big oops that goes viral as well.
Well, let's go back 5-10 years. If something kind of hits the fan and we have a reporter calls us and says, what's your side of the story? How does this work? We only have to deal with them. But once this toothpaste gets out of the tube now, you're not going to contact, the 100,000 people on Reddit who spread the screw up you just did yesterday, or you can't control it. You can't put the dam up anymore, so you got to be quick and you got to be careful.
Well, so in a lot of ways, though, what's the message? If I'm somebody who's thinking I need to do more of this, I mean, I deal with small business owners all the time that are saying I need to be doing more of this stuff, and the only example they have, is what they see kind of other people out there doing, and so they start to putting their toe in the water, and right. And sometimes you have to experiment. With things, you don't know what you're doing with it and you're experimenting. I would say that's true of a lot of the social channels, particularly the last 4 or 5 years that came out.
Yeah.
It was really easy to look foolish, but it was also probably the way that maybe you landed on something that worked.
Well, that's the thing is I don't, I didn't set out to create the book to highlight people trying. you know, that wasn't the point. I have no problem with people trying or screwing something up and it's not working. That's not where my anger kind of gets pointed towards. It's usually towards the companies or the people who are, you know, teaching people the wrong way to do it, or talk, or just taking advantage of it, or going the lazy way out, where I screw up things too. I tweeted from the wrong account 3 days ago, but it was of no significance whatsoever. So it's not a big deal. I don't think people or brands are you know, infallible, that they won't make a mistake. My issue is the mistake is not I've hit the wrong key, or I've just kind of, I didn't understand how to use a hashtag. It's more of I'm trying to leverage a hurricane for profit. You know, yeah, I'm going to publicly shame a customer for not tipping. That's where I mean, you know, screw ups. Like you said, you and I both, we both screw up all the time, and you only learn if you do wrong. But it's the ones who are doing it on purpose that I have a problem with.
Yeah, I would say that one, if there are a number of hard and fast sort of rules, I think, in here, but that one of you just touched on that, you know, showing up a customer or worse, you know, responding when you, I mean, I know you get these, I get these completely wacko emails from people that, I don't know, I didn't offer something free enough or something, you know, yeah. and you know, the gut is to say, well, you know, screw you, yeah, mister, right? Yeah. But you just have to let those go. I mean, because anything that you respond to is basically public.
And that's where it's going to go. I witnessed something a few weeks ago where somebody ripped apart a software developer or something, and he defended his company and himself, and he was angry. He's like, here's the proof. Here's when we wrote you back. Here's this. And got, he was upset, and it made him kind of look bad because of his language. But I sat there and going, you put your life and your heart and your soul into this stuff, and somebody comes out there and publicly rips you, and they're lying.
Yeah.
You know, that's where that's a huge issue. Like I got some email today from people about we've shifted over to you know, creating the Unpodcast instead of just blog posts, and my list is used to hearing from me once every 2 months when I blog something, and now they've heard from me 3 weeks in a row with every episode we put out, and some people are saying, you know, slow down, this is, whoa, you know, why are you're promoting too much. I'm like, whoa, I'm promoting something, more content, free content. And we're busting our ass to make it. And I realized that we do have to take that brand high road, because as soon as you let loose, people will take that screenshot, they'll upload it and go, hey, look what this jerk said. And trust me, I have a whole legion of people waiting for me to do something like that, so they can run with it, because I deserve it because of I pointed out for everybody.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. It was like Stephen Covey, you know, wrote the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and you know, then turned around and wrote the, you know, 7 Habits of, you know, of I can't remember the exact title, but Raising Children. And so all of a sudden, Stephen Covey's children had to be perfect.
They had to,
right?
Because you're waiting. You're just waiting for one kid to steal a chocolate bar, and you call him a fraud.
And so I'm sure that does happen to you a little bit, because you have so sort of willingly and vocally pointed out, you know, miscues. I'm sure people are waiting for you to send out that default LinkedIn message.
And I, you know what? I'm okay with that, because I think when you polarize, you do push people both ways.
Exactly.
I don't think you can have a strong brand, to me, that creates a vicious loyal following without having the other side of it. And I when I do take heat for something, I eat it. You know, I have to take it, because I dish it out, and it's the ones who dish it out and can't take it is different. But I'll stand up and I defend myself, and I'll, because most people won't. And also, you know, and that's where, for me, if I'm going to be loud against brands, I'm going to be loud defending mine. And I'm also the first to admit when I've messed something up.
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, you just marketing lesson 101 there, you know, one of the ways that you are able to stand out from a crowd is to take a stand or find some way to differentiate from what everybody else is doing. And you gotta stick with it.
Yeah, I think as long as when you're taking a stand, you actually believe what you're taking a stand about.
Of course,
you know, we've seen a lot of examples of, you know, artificial outrage or something, you know, where you take the strong stance because you think it'll be popular. And if you don't believe that, you know, if you don't have the conviction behind it, it's going to fall pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, there's few. I used to always tell people that if you really truly believe in the company you're working for and the product you're selling, it you can probably sell it, you know, without any skill, you know, because it'll just come across. But the flip side of that is not always true. You know, it's pretty easy to see when somebody's not really that enthused about what they're doing. Yeah. Well, let's flip to a little different message. As I read through this book, I don't often laugh out loud when I'm reading a business book. And, you know, this is, in a lot of ways, this could be marketing stand-up comedy. Right. Is this book sort of pasted together some of your routines?
Yeah, it does. Where I my greatest compliment, I got it yesterday as well, was the George Carlin of marketing, where, you know, I'll tell it like it is. I'll make you laugh, but I'll make you think. And Louis C.K. of marketing was nice to hear once too. And even the Henry Rollins of marketing. So that really is my world. If I, you know, I do talks for a living. Right? You know, I write those books and we do talks, and humor is a huge part of that. But I think if you laugh, you listen. Yeah. And once you start listening, then I can make an impact in there. So, you know, I smack people in the face with the humor, and it's, you know, it's self-effacing, it's industry-facing, it's one where we look at ourselves and say, really, you know, are we really doing this? Are we really going there? And luckily for me, so many, you know, talks out there and business talks are so dry that I can kind of come in there guns a-blazing, and people say, why don't you go into comedy? I'm like, well, I can be a mediocre comedian or one of the funniest business speakers out there, and I'll take the business one for now.
Yeah, that's right. And unless you're in on Comedy Central, it pays a lot better too.
Exactly. I don't think the road comedian isn't making enough money to make a living a lot of times. So
yeah. Well, so what's interesting is, you know, I pick up business books for the most part to learn something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a bonus to be entertained. But this book, I flat out, you should go buy this book to be entertained. You know, you can read it in an afternoon. But what's the lesson that you really want somebody, is there kind of one takeaway that you want people as an overriding message to get from reading this business book?
Yeah, I think the whole thing is the only important case study or benchmark or thing out there is what you're doing with your business and your clients. So the whole point of this is not using QR codes for the sake of using them, not using Twitter because somebody told you to, you know, not doing certain Facebook things or LinkedIn things or anything in business because somebody else said you should. It's just really saying, if any of these, like out of all all the examples in the book, if any of these people just stood back for a second and went, why are we doing this? There would be like two pages in the book. You know, it's just people not stopping for a second and saying, is it a smart idea to put a QR code on that billboard off the freeway?
Right.
You know, when people are with you know, motion plus distance does not equal good scanning, like that. Should we really have put this QR code on a automatic door that opens outwards and you can't scan it? You know, that type of thing, where should we not be scheduling tweets, let alone having them go out during a national tragedy or catastrophe? Should we not align our brand with trying to leverage Martin Luther King Jr. Day? Like, there's a lot of stuff. You just step back for a second and go, that's probably not a good idea. There wouldn't be this book.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. So let me ask you to, because I don't think you share one in the book. Have you seen personally, other than the toilet, the QR code inside the toilet, have you seen personally a really great execution of a QR code use?
I see them all the time, to be honest with you, but they have to be usually in closed systems. So it's the hospital band on your wrist that has patient information, but all the nurses have a direct scanner to pull that up. It's the concert or the sporting event that has the QR code on the ticket and scan stuff for it. Like I see them used well, you know, at geek conferences, at tech conferences, they can be used really well because everybody, you know, recognize them because there's so many layers to get through. You got to recognize them. They got to work properly and go to the right page. So yeah, I have seen them work really well. I've seen Firehouse Subs has some great stat data on putting them on the tent cards on their tables and enticing potentially new franchise owners to, you know, request information. So there's places that they've worked. And the problem is for every one that works, there's 1,000 out there that just have wasted space and wasted people's time.
Well, I think, you know, we mentioned Jay Baer earlier, and he has a great new book, a fairly new book called Utility.
Yeah,
and,
great one.
And, you know, I think that's the other side of any of these uses. I think a lot of times, when people do marketing really well, it's because it benefits the customer. And So even though maybe our attempt is to sell them eventually, there's some usefulness in what we're doing. And so I think that's where people really miss it on things like QR codes, is they're really just another trick to get us another layer deeper, you know, as opposed to something to benefit us.
But and that's the whole, and especially I even see them so much now, it's like marketing or advertising 101, the call to action. I see a QR code in an ad or a sign or a bus, and there's no reason or incentive to even scan it. It doesn't even say scan here to get a coupon or more information. It's just a QR code slapped there and gives me no reason to even go there anyways. I'm like, we've lost 101.
Yeah, yeah. I actually encountered one in New York City. I can't remember what building I was in, but there was an organization, a nonprofit organization doing a food drive, and they were able to get these cans stacked up with labels in such a way that it created a QR code.
Right.
And so you were able to stand there and scan it. So it was part novelty, I think, too.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a neat use because of the way they tied it into, you know, who they were and what they were doing.
Well, I saw in Alberta and up here in Canada, they had a corn maze shaped as a QR code from a plane overhead can take a picture. Now, obviously, nobody flying over that's ever going to scan it, but the PR they got for their Halloween fall kind of corn maze, if that increased their attendance by a good chunk, then it's worth it to them. So sometimes the QR code doesn't even
novelty, right?
It's just exactly, it's the novelty of it. I think that's what we have to realize there. I love them. I love the idea of them. I really do. But you know, until phones have a native application already built into the phone where the camera instantly recognizes it, you know, we're not going the place we need to go, you know, where Microsoft just dropped support of their tag that they're using. And because of the underutilization of them, we're the same with QR codes.
Yep, absolutely. Another category I see covered a lot in the book, and I see certainly plenty of examples myself, is kind of over self-promotion, over self-congratulation in marketing. I mean, is there a line in that? Because I'll give you an example. If you're a speaker, as you are, you know, talking about where you're speaking next and your schedule coming up for the quarter, I mean, that can have some benefits, but it can border towards crossing line of, oh, I mean, in some people's mind, oh, don't you think you're cool? So you know, where is that? Is there a line? Or, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think, and I lean on the conservative side of promotion because of, you know, how much I yell about it, that people know, I think, to the point where it's not, the ratio isn't 80-20, it's not even 90-10. To me, like, I tweeted back in 2008, 2009, I tweeted 10,000 times before I ever did any kind of promotional tweet. Now, that's excessive, but I just think when, if you look at your Twitter timeline and you look at the past 30 tweets, if you've said something about yourself in a promotion manner, you know, now's not the time to send the next one. I think there's a balance. I think we should never humble brag, you know, where it's the, I'm so humbled that I'm keynoting to 23,000 people tomorrow. I'm like, you know, well, if you were humble, you wouldn't say it. You know, I just think the word humble, it's got a kind of an alarm to me a lot of the times where, you know, do I want to retweet every testimonial from every talk or every time somebody tweets my talk? For sure. But I love, because it makes me feel great and it's great promotion. But, you know, for every good tweet or positive one during it, because I speak in tweets, you know, it's like a very, very short lines of what I say. For every 1,000 that are tweeted, I'll put out one, because we do have to, I think, realize that people are on these social networks not for us, but for themselves. And the more you promote, the more risk you have to have people leaving, you know, not following you or unliking your brand. And we have to balance that out. How much is it worth the promotion versus the loss of potential followers?
Yeah. It's like a bank account, right?
It is. Well, this is. We call it social currency here, you know, you got to give before you take out. And people will hit Twitter, Facebook just right from the day one and start promoting. And they're wondering why they're not getting any traction.
Yeah. So throughout the book, you have obviously lots, not only examples, but screenshots and pictures and receipts and things.
Right.
Where do you get all of these? I know you probably have a keen eye and ear for them, partly, but surely people are now sending them to you.
I have become like the lightning rod or head Sherpa on top of moron.
Repository.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah. I'm like the moron guru on top of the mountain where people are just like, look at this, take this. And I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating. Every day I'll get either an email from the contact form of this, of unmarketing.com, or a private Facebook message on the Facebook page, or a tweet that'll say, have you seen this?
Yeah.
And here's the amazing part, though. Half the time it's somebody outing their own company.
Oh, yeah.
And saying don't say I'm the one who sent this.
Well, yeah.
Right? I become like the whistleblower for moronic behavior and branding. And when big things hit the fan, I'll probably get 20 to 30 messages from people saying, "Hey, did you see this?" Yeah. And I love it. It's just like an unending stream of content where just every week we now print something out to read on the podcast about it, saying, "Here's our new one." You know, here's because people just sent it to us. Between that and being a big fan of Reddit, you know, there's a lot of stuff that hits there that it's the where geeks unite online. You get to see a lot of mess ups, good or good things and bad things too.
Yeah, and I guess it's the version of the train wreck too, right? We really want to we like to see that. You know, we're gonna flip to that page. Yeah, I get pictures of people, various uses of duct tape.
So we all get different things from people. And
So you mentioned your podcast, video production, I guess, version. And you want to talk about that a little bit? Tune into that?
Yeah, we just launched it about a month ago now. And we do it fully in a studio with, three camera shoot. So I hesitate sometimes to call it a podcast because people who – podcast is actually a polarizing term, I've found.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously you know much better than I do, but I found out the industry is very interesting. You know, you have the old guard, the new guard, and the term podcast, people either say, "Hey, I love them," or "I've never listened to them," or "I don't listen to them." And so we call it a show, and because we have a full video show of it, a talk show, myself and Allison Kramer, who's my not only my best friend, but the person who helps write the books for me. So it's really a talk show style. We do it at you go to theunpodcast.com or unmarketing.com. We release an episode every week. We record a bunch at once. So we record four at a time in a studio, two on podcasts. And we actually do a Vegas one called the Vegas 30 because we both love Vegas. We've been there about 75 times combined. And we do it for people who are over 30 going to Vegas because Vegas is a different world at 21 than it is at 35 or 40. So we say it's too old to stand in line, but too young to retire to the bingo hall. And we have a blast doing it. We've kind of come out of the gate, guns blazing, and I can't wait. We're going to the studio in a couple of days to record some more.
And the book, of course, can be found at Unmarketing and as well as all the places where you acquire such reading.
Anywhere that your and my fancy books can be found.
Yeah, and now I wouldn't think that this would translate to, I'm sure there is a Kindle version, but I would think this is much better. This is one of those books that's much better in paper.
It's like a mini coffee table or back of the toilet book. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Scott, it was a pleasure. Hopefully we'll see you. I know we were talking about off air. I'll be in Toronto probably maybe after the show comes out. I don't know. So it was October 21st. Either it's that now or it's past, but so hopefully we'll meet you out there finally on the road.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on, John.
Thanks.